You are listening to the Community of Grace, Church of the Nazarene weekly podcast. Community of Grace is located in Framingham, Massachusetts. For more information on the Community of Grace, you can go to our website at communityofgrace-framingham.org.
So we're going to open up to Jeremiah 17, which is, in your Recovery Bible, it's page 956. 9 through 10 is what we're going to start with. So, this is kind of out of all of the scriptures in the Bible that talk about self-deception, and there are a lot. This is the one that really rings in my head a lot. And Jeremiah writes, "The human heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked." Other translations say, or desperately sick. So when we talk about sickness, wickedness, self-deceptive, those are words that we use a lot in recovery, right? Those are words that we talk about, like self-deception. We talk about lying to ourselves. We talk about not really being honest, right? And so we talk about this thing that beats in our chest, that drives so much of our emotions, is the most deceitful thing that we have to deal with. That's like ourselves turning on ourselves, right? We're driven by our heart. It kind of means like we're driven by our passions, right? We're driven by our impulses. We're driven by our desires, which the world likes to tell us, follow your desires, right? The world likes to tell us following our desires is a good thing. But when we know that inside of me is corrupt, inside of me is deceit, then that really makes me have to rethink, who am I following? Am I following myself? Because if I'm following myself, if I'm listening to what my heart says, and God's word tells me that my heart is the most deceitful thing of all things and desperately sick, maybe I don't want to be following my heart, right? Maybe that's not my best choice. But what's he really talking about there? What's he really talking about when Jeremiah tells us our heart is deceitful? Our sin in us, our sin nature.
Yeah.
And what does our sin nature look like? How does it play out in our life? What are the problems it causes us?
Lust.
Greed. Selfishness.
Addiction.
Anger. Pride.
Yeah.
Bitterness.
Envy. What was some? Who? What? Anger? Did you say? So many, those are bad things, right? The sin nature is that stuff that tears us apart. It tears apart our relationships. It gets in the way of us having healthy job environments. We go to work angry and prideful all the time and thinking, I know it all and nobody else better tell me what to do. And that doesn't go very far in the work environment, right? Lust takes out so much. You know, we talk about sexual sin in the Bible and it's repeated over and over and over again. How much lust just gets in the way of people's reason, right? It makes people do ridiculously stupid things. Remember we talked about David a few weeks ago. Remember that? And how because of his lust and his impulsive actions, he ended up having to He made bad choice after bad choice to cover up his first bad choice, right? What'd you say?
One lie leads to another,
and it just snowballs, and it gets out of control.
David slew Goliath.
Yes, he did. And I'm trying to think if that ties into, if I can think of, that was David behaving pretty much in obedience to God, walking out in faith with him, right? So that was David not acting on his sin nature. That was David trusting in the Lord and being bold and brave to do something that seemed impossible because God told him he could. And that's where we want to be. Because the reality is, in our recovery, there are going to be times where we feel like it's impossible, that it's too big for us, it's too hard, it's too forever. But God tells us right here in his word that it is possible. He tells us he empowers us to not have to live according to our sin nature anymore. He tells us we don't have to be driven by our heart, our deceitful part anymore. But we have to make a decision about not following that sin nature anymore. And when we're talking about self-deception, it's where we start thinking that we're kind of the exception to the rule, right? I was sitting in a group today, and a guy was telling his last relapse story. And he said, you know, I got off the heroin, and I was doing really well. I lived in a sober house for a couple of years, and I became the house manager, and I was sponsoring people, and I was doing so well. I felt like I knew, like I had myself together. And he said, and one night I just decided I'd just smoke a little weed, because I figured that was never really my problem. And I'm hearing him tell this, and I'm just like, I've heard this story so many times, you know? I hear this story so many times. That's not really my problem. And he said, you know, I smoked that joint. And he said, it was a bad experience. He said, I hadn't used anything for so long. I was just so paranoid. He said, I was miserable looking out the window and just thinking everybody was after me. But he said, there weren't any negative consequences for it. So I felt like I got away with it. I felt like I can do this. All right. But he said that snowball effect started happening. He made one bad decision, and instead of stopping it right there and saying, bad decision, let's go a different direction, he started that self-deception and saying, maybe I'm the exception. Maybe I'm going to be able to do this. I can do this. Yeah. And he said, you know, we know the end of the story. It didn't take him very long till he was right back using heroin again. He had lost his job. He wasn't able to sponsor anybody anymore. All of the stuff he felt good about in himself was gone. And how fast did it happen? So much faster than it took him to get there in the first time, right? Because that's how this disease works. It's a progressive disease, right? Once you get to a certain point, you just find it just goes from 0 to 60 so fast.
Satan.
Absolutely. Lies. That self-deception is what gets us in trouble every time. So if we turn over to Luke 11, if you want to, Jesus is talking about the Pharisees. You know, the Pharisees and Jesus weren't best friends. So Luke 11, way down toward the end, starting at verse 42. Jesus and the Pharisees didn't get along real well, for the most part. The Pharisees looked really good on the outside. You know, they were the guys who were dressing right, they were going to the right places, they were saying the right things, but inside they were as corrupt and rotting and disgusting as if they didn't know God at all, right? They looked like they knew God and they were buddies with God on the outside, but on the inside there was just this dark emptiness. So verse 42 says, what sorrow awaits you, Pharisees? This is Jesus talking. For you are careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens, but you ignore justice and love of God. You should tithe, yes, but do not neglect the more important things. What sorrow awaits you, Pharisees, for you love to sit in the seats of honor in the synagogues and receive respectful greetings as you walk in the marketplaces. Yes, what sorrow awaits you, for you are like hidden graves in a field. People walk over them without knowing the corruption they are stepping on. So let's translate that to the recovery world, to the addiction world. If we translate this to what it looks like for somebody who's doing the, you know, walk in the walk as far as what everybody sees in recovery, it's the guys who are going to the meetings. It's the guys who are working the steps, you know, they're doing the big book, they're sponsoring people, they're working at the sober house, you know, they're talking the lingo all the time. They're saying, you know, they're giving people advice. They sound like they're like poster children for recovery. But inside, they're not acknowledging that they're really struggling with stuff, right? Inside, they're getting eaten alive. Inside, they're struggling with staying clean, or maybe they're even sneaking some using here and there and hoping nobody finds out because they still look good on the outside. They're still showing up to the meetings. They're still even chairing meetings, you know? They're the ones who are all eyes on them. Wow, they're, you know, people respect them. That guy's got it all together. But inside, relapse, if it hasn't happened yet, is right around the corner, because inside is just disgusting dankness, right? It's looking good on the outside, not doing the work on the inside. Can you guys identify with that? You ever, you know anybody like that ever? Where you're looking good on the outside, doing the right things.
Even people that don't use.
Yeah, oh yeah. This isn't just about people with addiction, right?
I feel that is more common with people that don't use.
Because why do you think that?
They don't have that addiction problem. They have, you know what I mean? I don't know, maybe they don't have that main issue with drugs and alcohol, so they're, you know, maybe they have a social problem and they're trying to be someone that they're not, trying to pretend that they're someone that they're not.
Yeah.
Or I can think my older brother is that way.
Yeah, okay.
He tries to, you know.
Be that guy. Look like he's got it all together.
See the guy, yeah. The thing, saying the things you want to hear.
Yeah.
But I can see through that, though.
So we can see through it. We know he's a mess inside, right? Or that friend who's just, you can see it coming, but they're lying to themselves. They don't see it because they're just like, I'm great.
They don't see it.
Yeah. Ashton, were you going to say something? Okay. Well, but I think that that's a really good insight. I mean, we certainly, we're talking about the sin condition, right? So we're not talking just about addiction. This applies to all of us. Mm-hmm. In this case, when we were talking about the Pharisees, we weren't talking about addiction. We were talking about what was their corrupt nastiness inside. It was pride, right? I have this official position. Everybody respects me. I get to sit at the places of honor when I go into the temple. People listen to me. They look at me as an expert. And I don't want to lose that position. I don't want to tell people I don't even have a relationship with God. You know, they might think that they do, but they don't even know God because their heart isn't tuned into Him. They just think they're doing the checklist. And if we translate it to our discussion about recovery, they're doing all the stuff that they're supposed to do. They're going to meetings. They're working the steps. They're reading the big book. They got a sponsor. You know, maybe they're even like doing 90 and 90 or something like that where they can just like say, I'm doing all the right stuff, but inside it's a mess. They're not working on the stuff in here. There's no heart relationship, right? God's not in there. No change is happening inside. It's all outward stuff. And one of the things that we know about long-term recovery, the people that really get long-term recovery are the people that do the inside work. You got to do the outside work too, but that inside work, the outside work, the going to meetings, the reading the big book, the figuring out how to be different, live different, think different, feel different has to do with the inside work. Because that doing that stuff and the checklists will get you by for so long. It will. It'll carry you through until you're off probation or until she breaks up with you or until somebody you really love dies or what else? Somebody makes you really mad.
It's a really happy day.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Or the sun comes out and it reminds you of all those fun summer days when you just partied with your friends when you were using, and then it's all over, right? Because this part is still a mess.
I think it's also important to stay vigilant during recovery too, because
yes.
Sometimes if you're sober or clean for a long time, you forget that there's that dark side in there, and it's kind of like saying, you know, not believing in the devil doesn't save mm-hmm. you from him, and that's the same thing with, you know, with addiction. Just
yes.
If you push it back, it's not going to save you from it. You need to always know that it's there.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. You have to respect the power of the addiction and respect the fact. Can I say once an addict, always an addict without being insulting? You know I don't mean an insulting.
We know what you mean.
I mean it.
I'm pretty sure it's genetic.
Huh?
I'm pretty sure it's a genetic thing, so I think.
Because I don't want to ever think that I never label people addicts. If people want to label themselves addicts, that's their thing. But I think that having to walk in the knowledge of I can get a lot of freedom from my active addiction. I can get it way behind me. I can get it far in the past. So it's really not scratching at my brain every day. I can get to that point. But to be able to get to the point where I can ignore it is foolish, right? To think that I'm going to get to the point where I don't even have to think about it anymore is foolish. And that's what I think you're saying, Ashton, right? That vigilance. The vigilance is lifelong. Just like the vigilance that we have to have as Christians is lifelong, because our sin nature is always going to be a part of us, always. It's never going to go away. As long as we're in this body, on this earth, our sin nature is coming along with us. But what does God promise us about our sin nature? Do you know? Because it translates to what he promises us about our addictions too. He empowers us to overcome them. He gives us the ability to overcome them. That song that we sang about him being a chain breaker, that he sets people free, that's really true. It's not just nice words, you know, it's truth. That the power of God is way stronger than the power of addiction. Were you going to say something, or were you just moving? Okay. The power of God is way stronger than the power of addiction. But in order for him to take the reins of our life, we have to surrender to him. We have to. He is never going to forcefully take the reins out of our hands. Right? He's never going to, as I'm going along driving my life, he's never going to come along and jerk those things out of my hands. I have to come to a place of brokenness and humility before him and say, I am a mess and I can't do this. I need you to take the reins. Mm-hmm. And then he's always faithful to do that. He never is going to stand back and say, no way, Day. I've been here all this time waiting for you, and you've just been a jerk and ignoring me this whole time. So, too bad, so sad. Wish you had done it, you know, a year ago. He'll never do that. He's waiting there for me to wise up and recognize I need him to do this because I can't. Our worst self-deception, I think, is when we don't recognize that we need to surrender. When we think somehow we can control this. When we think somehow We've got this figured out. The greatest strength that we'll ever have in recovery or any other aspect of life is to be able to say, God, not my will, but your will be done. Not my will, but your will. Because I know my will is messed up. I know y'all look at me like I'm just so perfect. I know. Because I know. My husband's back there saying, what? No, I'm totally kidding, of course. But I think I know how messed up I am. When my will takes control, I embarrass myself. I have to apologize. Because I get angry. I get nasty. I get prideful. And then I'm like, oh, that's not who I want to be. And I have to surrender again. I have to say, Lord, get me out of the way. I'm a mess. And I have to keep doing that over and over again. Every day I have to do that. You know, we talk about starting your day off like one day at a time is a real thing for a reason. Just today. And sometimes not even for all of today. Just like for right this minute. I just need to surrender and say, I'm a mess. Not my will, but your will, God. Just for right now. Not mine, but yours. I'm a mess. I need you. So I think when we look back at Jeremiah and we see that God's word itself tells us this part of us, we're so deceptive and it's so easy for us to do this. We can look in the mirror and say, oh yeah, I'm good, you know, I'm good. But boy, we're so good at deceiving ourselves. We're so good at lying to ourselves. So I just want to close this in prayer, then we're going to take a little break.